This is Helen Stubbs for Galactic Chat interviewing Donna Marie Hansen. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
How are you going?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Now, your first novel, Reyessa and the Space Pirates, was published this year. It's a fast-paced, fun read, and I highly recommend it. I'm going to share a quote from your blog. You said, "Just write. Don't hold yourself back for silly reasons, like I only write this genre. Do it now. Don't wait. Just go for it." And I think that's great advice. Now, you got serious about writing and contributing to the speculative fiction scene in 2000. So thanks for talking to me.
You're welcome, and thanks for, well, reading my blog and liking my quote. That was interesting behind that quote, because I was thinking back on my writing career and thinking, you know, I'm writing like paranormal romance now, and I had the idea and I've had lots of story ideas that I never wrote because I was back, you know, thinking, no, I'm writing this and I'm trying to do this. So I only write, you know, this genre. And now I sort of think, well, don't hold yourself back. And I've also been, you know, in audience in panels where people say, look, just don't think about it, just write.
Like,
you
know, the genre con, I felt that was a strong message.
Yeah.
That came through. Doesn't matter what category it's in. But do you think we have that propensity within us to think that we're a certain kind of writer, or we want to be a certain kind of writer, and we push ourselves towards that? Or how do you think that works?
Well, I think whatever works to motivate you is got to be the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to be a science fiction writer and that's what you're aiming for, do it. Yeah. But if you get an inkling, you know, an urge to write a crime novel, don't stop yourself.
Follow,
you know,
it.
Just write yeah. what comes to you, because, you know, it's like reading, you know, you don't read all the one genre, read across genres, read nonfiction, because all of that gets thrown into that chaff bag that you use to feed your writing habit. And you could use crime tropes or romance tropes or other tropes in whatever you're writing. I mean, that's what's fantastic about GenreCon, again, is that it's a tribe of genre writers, but not all necessarily writing the same genre,
and
you know.
All mixed up and different
yep.
things. I think that's really exciting too. Mm. So what are you working on at the moment?
A number of things, because, as you know, it's NaNoWriMo, writing a novel in a month, and one of the things for that is that, you know, it should be a new project.
I see that you wrote, how many words did you write yesterday?
Oh, 5,000, but
wow,
I wrote 5,000 on
good.
Sunday as well,
awesome.
And I veg for most of the day, so it really depends whether I've got a scene. I mean, if you don't have a scene to write and you're trying to think as you go through, it can take a while.
You sort
and you
of
might
bake
just
it when you're not at the
keyboard.
It's,
and it is quite interesting. So I'm working, my NaNoWriMo project is called Spirit Bound, and it's actually the sequel to Be Spelled, which is my paranormal romance that's coming out in February.
And is that through Escape?
Escape, yeah. So that's Escape. And when my friend Nicole Murphy, you know, she was one of my beta readers, and she said, you should really write Grace and Declan's story. They're one of the side. They're the side characters.
Yeah, great.
And she said, and you should do that first before Bespelled, you know, so that the story is comes in that order. And I said, oh, but, you know, I know.
This one's coming out.
That's a fab idea, but I don't really know how they
Didn't
actually
she have
got
suggested
together.
That a year ago or, yeah.
Well, I only wrote Bespelled in October.
That is some fast action.
Yeah, no, it was really quite funny because I went to, so 2012, Nicole dragged me along to the Romance Writers Conference in Gold Coast.
Were
and
you slightly reluctant to go?
It was a new world, really.
Me too. And I felt the same going to GenreCon. It's just a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, so. And because I've been in the spec fic scene and I've been around for more than 10 years and I know a lot of people, so it's like, hey, how you doing? Hi,
like,
you know,
home.
And you go to a romance thing and you don't know anyone, or you know four people.
Yeah.
And a bit of a loner and a bit of a Nigel, no friends.
And it was on the Gold Coast, my hometown.
But it was fab. Look, it was a fab hotel. It was a fab event. Anyway, one of the last panels I went to was a bunch of editors, and I think some New York editors. Saying, well, you know, what are we looking for? And someone said, oh, look, I really think a story with witches would be really cool.
Right.
And I was like, oh, so from leaving the hotel, and then I went to the city with Matthew. We spent a day in Brisbane and, you know, went down the river, and I just got this idea, and I went, oh, I've got this idea for a novel.
Sorry, and is it set in Brisbane or not?
No, it's set in Sydney. But
inspired by Brisbane.
Inspired by that just, you know, if someone said a word and, you know, and I actually like challenges like that where, you know, someone says, oh, look at this pot plant now, make up a story about it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm quite happy to do
what
those.
What was the
as
word, can I ask?
Oh, witches. Just witches.
Yeah, right.
A paranormal romance with witches in it. And so on the train back to the airport, in the airport lounge, in the plane, I wrote the outline.
Great.
And I don't normally do outlines, but I wrote the outline because it had a fully, you know, fully sort of fleshed out plot.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle of writing another story called The Sorcerer's Spell. So I didn't want, I knew
project.
I couldn't divert.
Oh, you
yeah, so I was on another project.
Professional writer.
And and plus, you know, I'm doing university and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I had other things on and, you know, and Conflux. We were doing Conflux. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of time. But then I was in New Zealand and for a quick holiday.
Yeah.
And I started writing Bespelled then. And so, yeah, so I finished it, but it took me a while to get Escape to a pub, to accept it.
Yeah.
It got sent back a few times. I had to work on a few things because it was really the first time I'd actually tried writing a paranormal romance novel. So there were a few things that I needed to work on. Expression.
How long did the first draft take?
Not very long. Not very long.
Just a few weeks.
So by January I had submitted it. Yep. And then I submitted it about three more times.
Great.
So because Kate Cuthbert, who's the editor, I mean, your novel has to be pretty close to, you know, they don't.
There are the conventions of paranormal romance. Is that
it wasn't that. It was more like she needs it pretty close to how she's happy with it, and then they do copy edit. You know, you're not doing major structural edits or anything. She's accepting a novel that is, it's doing everything that she wants it to do.
Right.
And, you know, and I was a bit embarrassed, I think, as a writer, you know, getting these emails back going, yes, well, yes, that's good, Donna, but you need to do this and you need to address this. And I'd be like, you know, that's so basic. How stupid am I, you know? And it was really stupid. It really wasn't anything to do with writing paranormal romance. It was writing errors. Like, she had no problem with the story.
Yeah.
She did not critique one thing about sex scenes or anything. It was, you know, being a bit purple in my prose. The dialogue was a bit not dialogue-ish enough, and she'd say, read it out loud, and I did, and it made all sense to me, and I'd send it back. Yeah. She goes, no, it's not quite right. And then finally it twigged. There was a couple of things that twigged for me.
Yeah.
Because, and I guess it's those filter words. I don't know if you've heard about, you know, but she felt the wall under her fingernails, or, you know, these things that words that interpose themselves between the narrator.
So instead of she felt the wall under her nail, it would be the rough texture of the wall or the...
Yes. So it's removing the words that are between
the
narrator or the actor in the story and what they're experiencing. So instead of saying there were tall buildings with, you know, big windows, you would say, you know, tall walls, buildings surrounded her, for example.
Yeah.
So that you're putting the reader right more in the action. And so Kat Sparks actually sent me a link to a blog about it.
Yeah.
I think I might have it up on my blog, but, you know, it's not just she felt, it's realized, she thought, all of these words, and I had to do a major kill.
A step back out of the reader's head, don't they? Or
yes, and I think
a character's head, sorry.
Yes, exactly. And the thing is that, you know, I hadn't really had this problem before. Like it's sort of a problem that I've brought into my writing. Because I go back and read some of my earlier stuff, and I didn't do that. I was a much more active writer. And so here was this manuscript, and I was just like, oh, my God, you know, how stupid am I? And then with the dialogue, I think it was, you know, having people speaking like, you know, with ands and, you know, complete sentences and having Kate point out, she says, look, people don't talk like that. You need to look at that. And that's, and then also like, oh, okay. And then, and anyway, so then it was accepted once I'd addressed that. And I think Kate was really generous with me. I mean, she knew I was doing Conflux and she'd send it back, and I'm like, you know, a week before Conflux doing this revision and sending it back to her, and it was a bit, yeah, so she was lovely. But I think she liked the story. She said, I really like the story and I want it to be the best it can be, you know, make it better. And so she did that, and with much relief. And so it took 6 months really from first admission to it actually getting accepted.
And when's it coming out?
1st of February.
And the title is Bespelled.
Yes.
Yes. And what is your, are you using a pseudonym for this?
Yes,
one?
I am. Yes. Yeah, so, yeah, then it got into the, like, you know, I published Rayasa and the Space Pirates under Donna, my real name, Donna Marie Hansen. And I've published all of my shorts under that name. And then Bespelled has got, you know, well, what I think are quite hot and graphic sex scenes in it. I didn't really want young adults to be, you know, going, oh, I'll read that, and if it was under my name. So that was really the principal thing. And also talking with other romance writers and stuff, there's a thing about a brand. And it was a matter of, well, you know, Danny Kristoff is going to be the paranormal romance writer.
Yeah.
And Donna Marie Hansen can be my, you know, young adult, science fiction, that sort of thing, so that people, you know, don't get a little bit surprised if they read something of mine.
No, and it's not about it wanting to be a secret, is it? You know, you don't want to keep it a secret. You just want to sort of make it obvious that this is one type of writing and this is another.
Yeah,
kind of brand,
is that? For the moment, like, it's not a hyper secret, but I think with my work, I probably wouldn't want people to Google my name and then lead them to very explicit writing.
Do you know, that's kind of more or less the same reason I just made up a alias last weekend, because I wrote some really nasty horror and I thought, you know, I don't want people to meet me at a party and then read that straight away, because I'll go,
It does give you a little bit of freedom, but it is a bit of hard work maintaining the two public profiles.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to go to my blog. I've got some free fiction up there, and I'm probably going to take both of them down. One of them is quite hot and dark, and I think Rowena Corey Daniels called it erotic horror or something like that. But it was written under my name, and it was sort of in the paranormal area, but probably not so much a romance. It's got but, yes, it's a bit explicit, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's probably something that should be rebadged under Danny Kristoff's name rather than, you know, if I think about it, because I did start dabbling in paranormal romance in shorts, in Scary Kisses and More Scary Kisses.
Yes.
And I've certainly written the only short story I've written all year, which I submitted to Clockwork Kisses, but I haven't heard whether that story got in yet.
Yeah.
My luck on the short story front has been really bad this year. So
you had
really
good luck on the novel front, though.
Well, yeah, right. That's just sort of weird, strange, fickle finger of fate, I think. But I certainly have, you know, it's been a busy year. Like, Conflux was up until April.
Yeah.
And I'm doing two subjects per semester for my master's in creative writing, which I've now handed everything up and sort of in the process of, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm doing with myself, which is probably why I've got a reasonable word count for the NaNoWriMo.
You've had some breathing space then after?
I submitted things early. I got the edits for Bespelled on, I think it was Thursday or Friday, and I had been working on my novel submission. Well, it's 20,000 words of a novel called Into the Dark Glass.
For your master's?
Yeah, for the masters.
Yeah.
And I've been working pretty solidly all week on it, like till 11:30 at night, and I'm not a night owl, so that's quite late for me. I kept rethinking this kiss scene, which was sort of the end of that, the first six chapters, which I had to submit. And, you know, and it's really weird. All of a sudden I'm like obsessed with about what people are thinking and how the kiss scene's working and what does it all mean. And Yeah, no, and I had to keep reworking it from my original thought because I needed to be thinking where to from here with that that novel. Yeah. And, you know, and you don't want to be too obvious too early and all these different things and, you know, and it's a young adult story and I don't know, but, yeah, so I spent the whole week basically just on this last scene, you know, a page of writing. And then the edits came. Yeah, and the edits came in for Bespell, and I went, okay, that's it, time to launch this. So I uploaded everything 8 days early. And then I found my edits only took me a day. It was a solid day, like I worked the whole day on them. But, yeah, because it's not structural in the sense that, you know, that you with an editorial relationship where it's more formative, you would expect to spend a couple of weeks or more on a if you had major rewriting to do. But this was not like that. There were a lot of suggestions and things like that. But it, you know, it was a fairly straightforward edit because I'd been through the, you know, 3 or 4, 5 resubmissions with Kate, who was really making those the bigger changes in that particular context. And, yeah, so I've got NaNoWriMo, but I'm moving house. So that majorly will debunk me because I find, that's logical, practical and opposite of creative. So, so if you see big word counts from me this week, it's really me just trying to get ahead, trying to get, a handle on that project.
How long until the move?
Well, technically my moving day from here is the 27th of November, which is a Wednesday, but I'll have to pack the weekend before because I'm still working. I'll have the day off for that. And next weekend, like we get the keys to our new place on Friday and I've got all my books and stuff in storage. So we'll be moving that stuff over the weekend. But that's not going to take the whole day, but it just takes your energy away from creative thinking.
So your book has been published, your novels have been published digitally. Do you have any thoughts on digital versus paper publishing?
Well, it's interesting because that's, you know, as part of the Masters, I've done a cultural research project on, I suppose, the impact of digital publishing. The topic, particular question I asked in my research project was when an author is published digitally, does that change their reading preferences? Are they reading more digital products? And you know, and generally the answer was yes. You know, some of the authors were already transitioned to digital.
Yeah.
And you know, some of the key reasons were, you know, accessibility. So, you know, you can get a fix pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You can store lots of books in a device. And certainly, and I guess the question really arose from my own experience where I have been chasing the traditional model now. So I started writing into late 2000. By 2001, I was in this Canberra Respective Fiction Guild. I was learning how to write, pushing myself along. And in those days, there wasn't, you know, it was a bad thing to publish your own work. It was vanity press. A lot of people did it, but then tried to hide that they were doing it by creating other presses. You could, you know, self-publish nonfiction, which I did with Australian Spectrum Fiction Overview, mostly because I couldn't really get anyone interested in it. But so
since then,
for a long time, you know, I wouldn't have thought of self-publishing or digital publishing because I was, you know, I had my goals set and, you know, I was really towing the traditional line and saying, no, that's the way it goes. And I think a couple of years ago, I think with the new e-readers and with people publishing digitally, I started to rethink that position.
And the markets really grew, didn't they? The publishers grew. I think the e-publishers that hadn't existed then sort of grew.
Yes. I think that's the case. And I think we got a Kobo, or Matt got a Kobo, and we started reading books. And, you know, I think it was a gradual shift. And I guess if I go back to my, you know, how I came to basically submit something to Escape Publisher. And I guess that was going back to the RWA conference in the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
I think that's where it really hit me. Like Nicole Murphy, my friend, she'd been telling me beforehand and she had done some digital publishing, you know, herself. You know, that this was the thing. And I guess that got to the point where I was thinking, hang on a minute, I've got all this unpublished work, which, you know, I'm going for the Guinness Book of Records for the most unpublished novels, you know, unless
How
I do something.
How many do you have sitting there?
Well, not that many. I think I'm not quite close to the records. But, you know, I have my first novel, which I haven't looked at for about 8 years, which I'm going to look at now because I was a bit before my time. It had sex with aliens, so technically it's a science fiction romance.
Awesome.
Or science fiction with romance.
Erotica as well?
Not so much, but I probably would have thought it. At the time, people said it was feminist science fiction and it had a few different labels, but I gave up sending it around. You know, you get to the point when after you've learnt a bit about writing where you start going, I better not show anyone that first novel. Oh, my God, you know, and you really fail to be able to look at it objectively. Yeah. You can't look at it objectively when you start out because you don't know enough.
Yeah.
And then
you think it's
when
wonderful.
You do know enough, you just sort of like cross the fingers and go, oh, keep it away from me. Yeah. But now I'm sort of thinking, and I did get some advice from Lucy Sussex who had reviewed it for a manuscript assessment way back when, that said, look, don't throw it out. She said that story is bigger than you are at this point in time. Like I was still a very new writer and that was such an epic story that I needed to go into that.
Would you start from scratch if you, like, maybe keep the bones of it, the structure, plot or something, and pretty much start over if you wrote it? Or would you use some of the... I don't know.
I've given it to Nicole to read and when she probably stops laughing long enough, she may give me some feedback. But it really depends what I want to do with it because I could keep it as it is and not make it fit romance tropes in the sense of how it goes. But there are a lot of first novel things in there that I would have to revise. And, because that was like, you know, I had scoped out 6 books for that series. That was my first attempt at writing anything. So, I have very grand ideas.
Wow.
Then I wrote a young adult fantasy with romance. And I think that I remember entering that into a competition once when Rowena Corey Daniels was quite active in the romance genre. And she used to post things about competitions. And I sent a bit of Argent Terror off. And I got all this feedback.
What
was
it called?
Argent Terror. Argent Terror. Well, originally it was called Journey to Argent Terror, but I think I've just shortened it now to Argent Terror.
Right.
But, Silverland. It's a Silverlands trilogy or something.
Right.
And then I got this feedback saying, well, you know, this isn't technically a romance fantasy. It's fantasy with romance. And I'm like, what the hell? I moved quite a way from ever submitting anything romantically again because I thought at the time, and this is how silly I was, obviously I don't know anything. So it's, you know, went on my merry way and I actually found the fantasy. So I started at so that would be in 2001.
Yeah.
I found that really hard to write fantasy. And to write fantasy that wasn't, a copy of something else, trying to be original.
Right.
That was probably thinking of these little things that are unique to the world that you're creating.
Yeah.
So, I tinkered with both of those for a few years. I started another dark fantasy called Dragon Wine, which, you know, got me a Varuna Longline Fellowships when I went up there to work on that and got some feedback from Peter Bishop when he was creative director.
Yeah.
I had high hopes of that. I love that story. It's something I'm really proud of. It's very dark. It's not romantic at all.
That's great. Sounds like you have a treasure trove of work out there.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I've written a sequel to that and I've written the sequel to Argent Terror. So, like, I've got a few series there that are almost done. And that haven't sold yet. Yeah. Plus the new stuff I've been writing. And
Speaking of selling things, you have an agent now, don't you?
Yes, I signed with Alex Adset. That took a while. Thank you. I'm really happy about that. So she's actually she signed me for a young adult series that I wrote called the first book's called Ruby Heart.
Yeah.
And it's a something I'm very excited about. I wrote the first draft of that at a retreat in Oberon.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago now. It's a sort of a Victorian gothic horror romance steampunk meld.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I've got my fingers crossed about that one.
Yeah, good luck with that one. Wow, I'm really impressed with how much work you have accumulated. That is wonderful.
Now it's been 13 years, and there were times when I didn't write anything. So I've had my down times, you know, where you just think, oh, what am I doing?
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, so with all that work, there must be moments when you feel like I guess we all maybe feel like we're not getting anywhere or something, but I mean, we're learning with each project, aren't we? And we're accumulating all this work.
I've got a few insights on that. I had a couple myself, and I think when Dragonwine, I think I remember submitting the first 25,000 words, which was all I had written of this novel the first time, and it got made the short list or long list of Varuna. Yeah. I thought, oh, this is good. Varuna is they run national programs. It's a writing center in the Blue Mountains, and you know, you can there was a lot of manuscript development stuff going on and fellowships where you basically go there.
To an editor, is it every day or something?
Sometimes. And the one I went to, I had a few sessions with the creative director. I did end up, I got shortlisted for the HarperCollins one, but they didn't take they didn't take to Dragonwine. I was so upset. I think, that how upset an author can possibly be. That was how upset I was.
So you really believed in that manuscript?
I really believed in that.
You wanted HarperCollins.
I wanted HarperCollins to like it, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that,
So I guess there's encouragement at the same time as.
This was about 2005 when I first started writing this, and I'm sitting there and thinking, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know this because I had been writing for 5 or 6 years, but all of a sudden I got this manuscript that, the creative director at Varuna saw something special in it, and I'm like looking at it and going, oh, my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to fix because I don't know what's good and I don't know what's bad about this.
So they didn't give you specific feedback then on
All I knew is that, oh, my God, this has got something. And then I sat down and thought about it, and I had this sort of epiphany where I just thought, well, it's not just the character and the story, it's, how it goes. It's really hard to actually articulate, but I think that was the moment where I said you don't hold on to your lovelies, you don't be kind to your characters, you have to punish your characters. That's something I learned then.
And it can be hard to do, can't it? Because we like our characters, maybe we don't want to be mean to them.
Not wish fulfillment. You're telling a story, I think that's why you can get novels that are, I've got a Mary Sue and they're perfect and nothing ever happens and they get all these brilliant ideas and you get to the end and you go, oh God, that was so annoying, but because they were never really tested I guess that was a big epiphany for me.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, I guess that just gave me the impetus to write that novel and keep writing it.
Yeah.
So I did. And writing retreats, I always find they're very useful for 2 weeks to immerse yourself in writing. Well, it's just that, and this doesn't work for everyone. And people who write full time at home, they're not going to get much out of a retreat. They're probably wanting the social aspect.
You get to hang out with friends and
hang out with friends and chat and go sightseeing. Whereas those of us who work full time or work, have got family. Being able to just spend day and day and day in your story world, I would find by the time I got to say the second Wednesday, I was dreaming, and inventing that in this totally amazing what I call my Zen space, but where it's just coming to you.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
I just, you know, some amazing stuff that I've dreamed up on retreats.
And so you've gone into the creative world. You've lost the pressures of everyday life.
Yeah, I've just been shit. You know, like what's come out on the paper is not really fit to be read, but I've got the rest of the year to revise.
And it's the creative process and joy. Like it's
those things that, you know, you put yourself, I mean, because you're writing yourself. So, you know, you're thinking, oh, how do I do this? Or, okay, they've gone into this space. What is there? What are they seeing? And you have to invent that. And I guess for me, that's where my most invention comes from, is when I have a run of a few days, but 2 weeks in a retreat.
So you can really get into it.
Yeah, and I'm out there because I have to invent. I've just spent, you know, $1,000 on accommodation, and I'm there with my peers and they're writing, so there's an expectation. Like, not that any of them would ever put an expectation on me if I sat around on my bum and bathed in the sun for 2 weeks. Like, they wouldn't care.
But I guess there's that camaraderie, which I'm seeing with NaNoWriMo as well, that people are putting out the words and encouraging each other and doing it together is quite wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, and certainly going on a, you know, a retreat with Nicole Murphy, who can just type like crazy, and you're sitting, you know, we sit at a group table, most of us. I think the first retreat we all sat in different rooms, but then it just merged. I think because I end up sharing my room with Kylie Saluka, a writer friend, who had left her cable behind, so we had to share the laptop. So I'd write in the morning because she wasn't a morning person. And while I was napping, she'd be in my room typing away on my computer on her manuscript till her cable actually turned up. So it actually worked out that we could work together, and it worked fine. And then we had a mini retreat at my place, and Kylie said, no, you sit in here. We'll all sit together, you know, and that's where it started. So we all, you know, sit around and write together.
Good thing about writing is it's not really very noisy. You're not going to distract each other unless someone's sort of talking to themselves. But even then, it's not too noisy, the talking.
Well, yeah, I think we do set some boundaries. But I think, you know, listening to Nicole pound out words while you're sitting there going, oh, what's my next sentence going to be? So, you know, if you're not competitive, that's fine. But if you've got a competitive streak like I have, you know, Nicole and I often have races. She's won a few times. I know some of the other writers are just like, I'll give up. How could you possibly write that much in a day or in a week?
How much does she write in a day?
Oh, you know, usually around the 10,000 mark.
Wow, that's
yeah, and do it like back to back. But I think I blew her record when we went to Oberon, and we actually ended up with 13 days, or instead of 14 days or something, like, because normally you have the day you come in and the day you come out as part of the fortnight, but we end up with an extra day, and it was really isolated. And we had to walk 1.5 kilometres up to the road to get internet reception.
Right.
So none of us, there was no internet distractions.
Oh, perfect.
All this stuff. Anyway, I wrote 80,000 words, which was the first draft of Ruby Heart, and everybody's like going, how can you possibly write that much? And I'm like, well, I just had a lot of 9,000 word days, and then I just ended up with an extra day, and, you know, I just, because there wasn't much else to do. You could walk around and you could talk with the others, and, you know, we still drank and socialized and all this, but, you know, and I was on a roll, and, you know, and if you're on a roll and you've got something to write, I think you can do it. I mean, I've since developed RSI, so I'm a little bit less able to do those word counts, and 10,000 words, if you're working the next day, it can be pretty mind exhausting. So I don't normally try for them, but I use the dictation software, and sometimes.
How's that going?
Okay. I mean, the errors annoy me sometimes. Like you know, sometimes it goes really breezy and then you stop and you go back and you go, oh, what did I say? Oh, that, you know, I have no idea what it meant. And then luckily there's a playback facility and I can fix that. But
so how much would you dictate before you go back and listen?
Well, I think the best is working out a technique. And the trouble is, if you're on a roll and you're in a scene and it's all in there and you're dictating it, sometimes you've got a few pages down and that's really hard to go back and correct.
Yeah.
So I try and do a couple of paragraphs and then go back and correct it.
Right.
Because the playback function, because there's two audio functions in the Dragon Naturally Speaking that I'm using, and one is it reads what's written and the other bit plays back what you said.
Oh.
And if you interfere or you go too far, then it doesn't play back what you said.
Right.
And honestly, you just go, you know, the action, the perfection, and you go, what the hell
right.
is that saying? And then I got it to play back, and it was that, and it was the anchor or her anchor, her protection. And, you know, I just could not get that. Sometimes you can get it phonetically, like if you read it and it's phonetically written what you said.
Right.
So you, I think if you work at it, you train it, you develop a method like me, I try and stop. But, you know, sometimes I don't stop and it's a few pages and then I basically have to work my way through some incredible errors. But other times.
So do you think it takes longer than typing?
No, the dictation is faster, but, and you have to work on your accuracy. And I guess I haven't dictated anything for bloody ages, not since last year.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the other day I was like, I'm tired. I don't want to type. I'm not going to put the microphone on. And I just started dictating and I was like, wow, I'm actually preferring this.
Yeah.
Which is odd, but maybe it's a good prevention strategy to not get the RSI back again. And I can walk around. It's a bit dangerous moving out of the, because I've got a cordless mic that I can go and make a cup of tea.
Yeah.
But the problem with that, like, yes, smart ass, yes, you can go to have a pee, go and make a cup of tea, walk around the room. Yeah, it sounds really good in theory until you accidentally or you say a word that it mistakes as a command. Like I went to make a cup of tea and I came back and I would have dictated a paragraph.
And
the picture folder was open because I had the character looking at a picture on the wall. And as soon as I said picture, it's brought up the picture, the command for pictures, and it wanted to open a file. So all the rest of the paragraph was not registered at all.
Okay.
And it's happened to me a couple of times, so... Yes, and technically if I was sick in bed and say I was, you know, had a sore back, I could set up my laptop and dictate in bed. And that's the beauty of it. It is versatile. It's not the be-all and end-all, but it's a nice tool to have in the repertoire.
Yeah, I was thinking.
But it's got limitations.
Yeah.
Like you can't swear, can't say, even, like I said, you know, something about she was looking at the guy's butt, and do you think that it would write butt if buck? And I'm like, no, but. And it's
looking at his buckets.
Spare words before, like it won't, you know, won't nice let you say the F-bomb. And, you know, and you can train it. You type the word in and you say it and repeat it and it goes, yes, okay. And then as soon as you dictate it, it's like it's hardwired not to
it's
swear.
Good. Right. Now, I was going to also ask about your sequel to Reyesa. You mentioned that you had encountered some problems writing it. What sort of problems did you come up against?
Oh, yes. Well, that was interesting. There's two things with the Reyesa, well, the sequel as such, is that it's got a different point of view character.
Yeah.
Without being too spoilery, you know, there is another character who is, you know, who turns up at the end of the first book. And so Ray is in it, but she's not the point of view character. And I did it in first person again, like Reyes and the Space Pirates was. But I came to the realization that it was really hard to write Reyes again in the same way. Like, you know, it's very situational, the comedic. You know, there's some funny bits in Reyes. Like, you know, it's a bit comedic in the sense that, you know, she's not been out of that asteroid.
She's very innocent. You know,
she's a bit innocent. She's pretty uneducated. Like, she's not stupid as such, but she's uneducated and she's gauche. And so once she's out in the world and you extrapolate her life from the end of Reyes and the Space Pirates, she's not going to be like that anymore.
True.
But there are essential characteristics of her that, you know, that survive, you know, her drive, her need to sort of excel and things like that. So that was the hard part. And actually deciding, well, I can't repeat that. I can't make another Reyesa and the Space Pirates exactly like Reyesa and the Space Pirates. I had to separate that. So it's set a year after. So she's a year older. The other character's also a year older. So I'd say that, and I haven't really got a good title for it. Like I always thought Reyesa and the Space Pirates was a stupid title.
But I think it's awesome.
I know, people say that.
Space Pirates.
Oh, yeah, because I think the original the original Reyes and the Space Pirates was originally a short story that I was going to call Space Audit.
Right.
And when the pirates turned up on the asteroid, that just totally blew it. It was not going to be a short story. I couldn't finish it. And I was already at like 8 or 10,000 words. And I went, oh, and that was the first time there was so Reyes for a long time was the one and only novella I'd ever written.
She had her own story that she needed you to tell.
Yep. And, you know, and Anton, Alwyn Anton, you know, he had to tell his story too. And he was a bit of a, you know, bridge of a prodigy. So that was the hard thing. One was hard trying to write it like Reyes and the Space Pirates, and then the other hard part was saying, no, you've got to cut yourself loose, move forward, different point of view. It still has its funny moments, but but it's more mature and more of a romance, I think, the next one is. Whereas I didn't actually write Reyes and the Space Pirates as a romance. It had a romance arc, whereas the sequel is more of a true romance in that sense. You know, right. There's a very hunky hero called Captain, oh, I think it was his name, Thorn. I think his name is Thorn.
Yeah.
I'm going demented. but there are some more space pirates, definitely more space pirates, and it has a sort of cliffhanger ending, which sets up for the third book, which is called Reyesa to the Rescue.
Wonderful.
So, you know, I've got the story arc sorted, and I will get on to
writing.
With
the age of the characters, I know that's important for young adult sort of romance. But they're not getting too old, are they? Because Reyesa was
16. So they're 17, 18. And she'll be 18 in the third book.
Great.
But she's, you know, they're living in a sort of, you know, future time that will never exist. You know, so there's a lot of liberties in how independent they can act, and you know, and about that coming from privilege and all that sort of stuff. And so I think Ray and Essa, I think Space Adventures, which is the title that I've tentatively called it, is sort of exploring the world a little bit more, and it's a little bit darker and a little bit old, a little bit more mature.
And when might that be available?
I don't know yet. Well, I've submitted it, so I'm just waiting to hear whether it gets accepted for publication, and, you know, I'll update my website
when you know. Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Well, I'll just ask you one more quick question, and that's about the Conflux Writers Day, Professional Writers Day. Any?
You know, I'm sort of only peripheral to that. That's the brainchild of Nicole Murphy.
Yeah.
Who's the president. At least I think she's still the president, because they had the AGM last night and, you know, it was really too cold for me to go out. But so she basically put Conflux up for the Aurealis Awards, and I think building a little bit on Fantastic Queensland's work, where they used to have professional talks the next day and a breakfast. She wanted to make the trip to Canberra worthwhile for people, not just coming for the awards, but having a professional writer's day.
Right.
And so moving away from a fan-ish convention to, you know, definitely having a professional writer focus. So she's set up this day. I think it's multiple stream. I think she's got about 20 sessions. I'm actually going to be doing a talk on writing communities and how you can use groups and retreats and to help you with your writing, which are a bit like what we were talking about, retreats, earlier.
Yeah.
So I'll be doing a talk on that. And I believe Kerry Arthur's headlining. Ian McHugh is a fantastic writer and really generous in sharing his writing experience. He's also going to be.
What's the date of that, if people want to?
Ooh. Now you've got me. Hang on. I'd have to look it up, but it's April, I think it's the 15th. But
April the 15th. And if people want to know more, they could look at the Conflux
website. Think it's on the Aurealis website. I think she was doing a separate website for, hang on. It's not showing up there. I'll have to email you that later so you can add. But yes, there is a separate website that Nicole's putting up for people to register. So there's a registration fee, which is quite moderate, I think. And it's going to be at University House. Yeah. And, we're really looking forward to the Aurealis Awards. I did say that, I wasn't keen to help out a lot. I'm really trying to focus on writing rather than writing peripheral activities.
Yeah.
I said to Nicole that I was happy to be the blonde bimbo woman handing out the trophies, which I believe she's going to take me up on. So I probably won't be able to get out of that. But
lovely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, a final question. What have you read or seen lately that you've loved?
Well, now that's interesting because I've read a couple of things, but I haven't been reading a lot lately because with everything that I've been doing. Yeah. But I did read, now this was interesting, I read a romance novel called The Untamed.
Right.
And it broke all of the sort of conventions of a traditional Regency romance.
Okay.
In that the Duke in the story dresses as a woman and lives with this girl.
Very cool.
And the girl is, sort of very on the edge of a lady. She does a lot of physical work and things like that. And it really just broke all the conventions. I was fascinated by this book. And it was actually Alex Adsett who said, "You've got to read this." So yeah. I did. So not everyone feels the same about it. And I guess I wasn't fascinated so much because there's a lot of things about Regency romance that I love.
Yeah.
It wasn't giving me all of those things. It was doing something so different that I just was like sitting up paying attention going, "Oh my God." And I did talk to someone about it who said, "Oh no, it didn't do that for me. I didn't gel with the guy," and blah, blah, blah. And I said, "But I think for me it was, I was just fascinated about what the writer was going to do with it." It's a Penguin, put out by Penguin, and I'm just trying to remember her name. Terrible. I do know that Valerie Parve mentored her in that particular novel.
That's okay. I'm sure we could find Untamed if we Googled it.
Yeah, so that did sort of blow my mind. In the same way when you read, a spec fic novel and you go, wow, how did this person think this up?
It does something different, doesn't it? And
the standout for me recently. And I've just picked up J.T. Clay's How to Survive, The Young Girl's Guide to Surviving the Zombie Apocalypse or something. Yeah, that was put out by Momentum. It's a digital book. I think she's a Canberran, actually, because she popped up on the CSFG list to tell us about it. I'd have to go and get my iPad to give you the proper name, actually. I'll just pop over here and grab that.
Donna is mobile. She's
yes, I'm mobile. I'm just popping over there because I do tend to buy a lot of e-books of late. Oh, and the latest thing is my purchasing craze has been 19th century erotic writing. Yeah, so I thought I'm going to just buy a couple of these books and just sort of dabble in looking at that because I mean one of the things that I do want to write that
titles for us of 19th century.
Yes, my Secret Life by Anonymous. That's apparently about this guy Walter. I think I remember reading a bit of it once. The Yellow Room, which I haven't read.
Yeah.
I think I've got something else called The Pearl, but if you Google it, you can find
Are they as racy as contemporary stuff or
I haven't read them yet. And I guess it's more that view into Victorian life. Yeah. And I did see a doco recently about Anne Lister, who was a Regency period lesbian.
Right.
She had a very open lesbian relationship and I've ordered her diary
from
the book repository because I think when I first looked they didn't have it and I went to Amazon and I think it was going to cost me a fortune to get it sent to me. But Anne Lister wrote her diary and all the naughty bits were in code, so it took a long time for people to actually undo the code and so somebody translated that. And, so apparently that was quite shocking. And the other thing, and what led me down this path was that I was writing a story to submit to Clockwork Kisses. And the character comes across a secret stash of erotic images because, photography was growing at that time. And apparently the first lot of images were very much, you know, naughty pictures.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
Yeah, so that was sort of a key part of my plot in eroticizing the character.
Cool.
And that's what led me to, like, some of those sites that I website I looked up were talking about these spanking novels and and these erotic fiction. And I thought, so I just had you know, too much time on my hands, obviously, and the credit card handy, and I went and ordered all these books, but I thought, well, you know, it doesn't hurt to sort of have a look back at that, because I really would like two things I would like to write: a Regency romance, not necessarily with lesbian sex in it, and a Scottish historical.
Right.
They are like, they're two things that I love to read, and I thought, you know, I just would like to write one, and I've got some ideas, but I just haven't written them yet.
Wow.
And that book was?
Yep.
It's called A Single Girl's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
By J.T. Clays.
Yes, that's it. And it's came out with Momentum just last week.
Wow. Wonderful.
Yes. Yep.
Well, I think that's everything that we have time for. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
I don't think you can get me to shut up. I'm sorry, I talk too much.
Oh, that's what you were supposed to do. It's an interview. I wanted you to talk. Okay. So this has been Helen Stubbs talking to Donna Marie Hansen for Galactic Chat. Thanks, Donna.
Thank you, Helen.